little knowledge is a dangerous thing. News, facts, memoirs, internet of old. Burn it. We are not born equal, so we must be made equal by the fire.
That's impeccable logic. Let's start the show!
Welcome to Board Killers, our mission to report the intel from the front lines of the cord-cutting revolution so that you, my friends, have all the information you need to be able to watch what you want, when you want, where you want, on whatever device you want. I'm Tom Merritt. This man is Brian Brushwood.
You're darn right. But more importantly, did you catch the phrase that wasn't in the original Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451?
That internet of old?
Internet of old? However,
the internet.
And I'm going to speak in code, although I don't know how you could have a spoiler on a book that's half a century old.
Sure.
But okay. The point of Internet of Internet 451, Fahrenheit 451.
New name.
Was the big betrayal or the big reveal is that they're not burning books because they want to keep dangerous ideas from taking root. They're burning books because books are dumb and everybody cool is watching TV. And in a post-internet era where we're in many ways dealing with the exact thing that Ray Bradbury feared, it'll be really interesting how this HBO version of the story shakes out with current common day, modern day nods and winks.
Well, speaking of a show entirely devoted to helping you to be able to watch television and movies.
You're doing great.
Welcome to Cord Killers. And our guest, Amos from Ritual of Misery, is here. How's it going?
Hey, guys. I just want to say, can Michael B. Smith or Michael B. Jordan do anything wrong other than let me mess up his name?
No, man. That's it.
The only thing that would have made that better is if midway through it, you got punched in the face by
Michael B. Jordan.
He was like, don't you mess this up.
Yeah, between guest spots on YouTube answering questions and Black Panther and everything that I see this guy in is just amazing. And he played the only villain I wanted to see more of.
Yeah, I mean that was my one complaint ? About Black Panther is that I like the villain the most out of everyone. Mm.
Complaint ? Right, because it's like that's kind of weird.
It's kind of great, cool. Right? Yeah. I mean, it's like certainly the Dark Knight, the villain was the best part of the entire thing.
Well, folks,
Two-Face.
We've got a
smooth
show for you today. It's gonna go butter smooth from here on out. What do you guys say we start with our primary target?
No. Wait. Yes. Shoot. You said it was going to be smooth.
All right. Our topic today is how many more reboots can we support? Hollywood Reporter sources claim Disney's going to reboot the short-lived Muppets comedy from ABC for its upcoming Disney streaming service. The Muppets on ABC, which lasted just about a season, was itself an Office-style mockumentary reboot of The Muppet Show, which is, of course, a spinoff from Sesame Street. Disney was exploring projects also based on Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Father of the Bride, The Mighty Ducks, and The Parent Trap. Everybody is rebooting everything, though. It's not just Disney. Netflix has got a Lost in Space reboot coming on April 13th. Brian, is it like, yeah, bring it on. Why not? Let's reimagine. There's no new ideas, or is it too much?
So let's wrap our mind around a different time. So we live in a 21st century world where property rights and intellectual property, these are all things that have to be contended with, whereas the need for good stories is as old as humanity itself. We all gathered around the campfire and we wanted some story.
It's all just a reboot of the Iliad and the Odyssey, if you really think about it.
I know you're saying that patronizingly, but that's really my point. If we were gathered around the campfire and I wanted to, and we were out of stories, and then finally in the quiet, as we hear the crackling of the logs, I was like, well, there's one story my mom told me once, and I only half remember it, but this was 30 years ago. But imagine a space family. And I go on to describe Lost in Space, right? Nobody loses in that. And in fact, maybe my version of telling it, filling in the gaps with whatever creative energy I have, takes it in a new direction where that becomes the definitive version of the story. I think that's the world that we live in, only with these, and granted, it's tacky and ugly with these corporate overlords, you know, looking at their catalog of crap to throw at us. But on the other hand, it's inherently human. Like, I don't get mad if I were to see Lady Gaga cover Amazing Grace. I would just say that is a song sung a different way. And I don't mind any of these being sung a different way.
But did you get mad when Fergie changed the national anthem?
Wait, did she? She didn't change the national. Did she?
Well, change up the presentation.
Oh, okay. She was like, "And Russia is great."
We should all be more like China and a little bit like Iran, North Korea. Too. I mean, no, it was not like that.
I don't think I am as allergic to reboots as many people are because I'm looking at it from the larger millennia long structure when that's always been the case is all we do. You know, Cars is Doc Hollywood in a crazy mashed up world of Cars or whatever. That's fine. That's fine. As long as it's crafted by exquisite artisans, I'm happy. Right.
I'm actually excited with most reboots because, like, for instance, The Muppets. I haven't been entranced by The Muppets since the original run back when I was a child. It always seems to just miss that need for me to watch it. Like, I just it's okay. So every time they bring it back, I'm always just a little bit hopeful that this will be the time. This will be the time.
It never bothers me when they
reboot.
Did you like the movie? Was it Jason? No, not Jason Lee. Who was in the movie? The one that was written by Brett from Flight of the Conchords. The music was all written like 5 years ago.
Oh, the
Amy Adams was in it.
2012 or
yeah, that one I thought was pretty good.
It was, but it wasn't rewatchable. I didn't find. But I mean, my kids loved it, so they saw it 500 times. So maybe I just got tired of it without realizing I was getting tired
so,
of it.
So rewatchable ... to a point. Put that on the movie poster from Amos.
Brian, I didn't mean to be patronizing because I thought you were going in a different direction with your point. Because I think you make the fundamental point of this discussion, which is reboot, not a bad word. All kinds of ways to go wrong rebooting. That's the real fear, is they're only trading on the name, let's say. Like, oh, we know people like Harry Potter. Let's reboot Harry Potter. And people say, well, wait a minute, it's too soon. Or maybe after a few years, they do it, but they don't use a very good cast or a very good director. I think that's what people fear, is like, are you going to provide something of value, or are you hoping just slapping the name on it will be enough to drag me in and then I'll be disappointed? Because that has happened
before. I'll tell you this much. Pre-2003, I would have agreed with every single bit of that sentiment. I would have been skeptical. I would have said too soon and all that stuff. And I did say too soon. This is dumb and you should not reboot this 20 minutes after the last movie was pure garbage. But I was wrong, because Batman Begins was awesome. And it led to the greatest comic book trilogy in the history of comic book trilogies. So
you agree? You still agree with what I just said, which is it's all about the execution.
Yes.
It's not
yes.
about the fact that you reboot. It's,
correct.
Are you being lazy by rebooting? Because it's tempting to be lazy. If you're like, hey, we already have the story, right? How much more work? If you pour extra work like Batman Begins did and said, well, hold on. Let's actually rework the story. Let's question the story. Let's tell it in a new way. Let's get really good actors. Let's get really good directors. Let's build on the story. Then it turns out great.
Think of it this way. You could probably count on your finger and toes the number of storytelling archetypes that exist. Full stop. Like, give or take, you could make about 20 categories and that's it. There's no room for any other character beyond this point. Characters, in order to break out of these molds, would have to become nonsensical and irrational and not worth watching. And knowing that, all of these big mega corporations already have IPs that correlate, you know, to these archetypes, then why, you know, in a world where you have to please shareholders, why wouldn't you use your existing archetypes to tell some version of that story using property that using pieces you already have on the chessboard? Does that make
sense?
That's
why you love Rogue One so much.
Okay. There is a wrong way to go about this, and you're Tom, you're not wrong to hold my feet to the fire, sir.
But I'm still waiting for a good Dragonlance movie to come out. It's been there's been two versions of some sort of crap to come out for Dragonlance, and we still haven't gotten a good one. So I'm still waiting for that. We can keep rebooting until I get a good Dragonlance.
I guess that's the other thing, too, is that there's in a world where there are so many low budget or relatively affordable properties that could be bought up. And because you're right. I mean, you could snap your fingers, say, I bought the Dragonlance franchise for $25 in a taco and I've written a totally new story. That will cash in on this property and feel new to everyone. So I don't know. It's complicated because I felt that anti-reboot feeling, and then I felt what it's like to be wrong.
I think that's the point I'm wanting to narrow in on this, and it was a cheap shot that I couldn't resist with Rogue One. But I think it's your exception that proves your rule, right? Which is you want new stories within the world of the fact that there are a limited number of types of stories and characters, but you want new stories sometimes, not just retreads. So there's a fine line to walk. You can introduce new characters in new worlds. Granted, we're all going to have the same stories, but it's cool to do that, especially introducing new stories within a familiar world in an unfamiliar way. That's fun. That's what you want from Star Wars, I think. On the other hand, rebooting Star Wars, probably too soon to do that right now, but would not be a wrong thing to do at some point when you're like, hey, we can actually do it better and do it from scratch. And we have an audience that isn't so nostalgically attached to the original that they will refuse to see it. But what Rogue One was, if I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it, for you, it was in the mushy middle. It wasn't a reboot, but it wasn't new enough.
Correct. That in fact, all right, look, if you are going to put words in my mouth, I'm glad they're words you stole from me previously to put in my mouth. Thank you.
No, I feel the same way about Rogue One. I enjoyed the commonality of it with the things that I've already seen and things that I knew, but there was something just slightly off kilter that didn't wrap me into the story. And it made me sad that I felt that way about a Star Wars movie.
Quick 10-second speculation. Are you guys optimistic or not optimistic about the Solo movie?
I'm not optimistic.
I'm very hoping
to be surprised.
Yes, hopeful but not optimistic. That's exactly how I feel.
Man, if only I had a new hope like you guys do.
Yeah.
I do not.
Otherwise, that Disney empire is striking back on me.
Well, hopefully there'll be a return of Jed. You know, Jed Holmes, cinematographer.
Yeah. So I do think the only case that we haven't really made here is that too many reboots is a problem because we do want new stories. And actually thinking along those lines is what made me think of the whole thing.
And if I can specifically identify the point of divergence is I did not believe originally, but I have come to believe that new stories can be told in familiar frameworks. I think we've seen
certainly.
Certainly with the Marvel franchises and the various, you know, iterations that we're seeing of everything. So I continue to be optimistic about.
How delightful was it for you? And we're going to talk about this a little later, to see Annihilation, though, because it was an entirely new world, story, and character.
So good. Tom. Yeah. Tom is so good. Annihilation. Spoiler alert, and this is not a spoiler. Annihilation is like a dream I can't get out of my mind. It's a spoiler
for later in the show, is what Brian's trying to say.
Spoiler alert. This is my review for Annihilation.
But we will talk spoilers about it in spoiler in time.
Yeah.
That's just a preview then.
One thing that you shouldn't be spoiled on is the fact that we are supported on Patreon. We say it every show.
Yeah.
Hold on, Brian. I think there's something asymmetrical going on here. We say it every show, but does everyone listening pledge?
Well, no. And you're a jerk for, you know what? I'm going to defend everyone. You know what? Somewhere out there is somebody who's freeloading and he doesn't think or she doesn't think that he or she is freeloading, but you know what? You are. And that's okay. Cause there's more of you than us. We can't fight you. You win, freeloaders. I guess you just listen for free and we just keep showing up, giving you premium, high quality, top dollar entertainment spending money on Bryce, our number one expense.
What? I mean, actually, Brian, I think you and I are our number one expense.
All right, hey, no. Let's not, don't distract from the main issue.
What happened to Bryce issue, and Eagle, huh?
Bryce is wondering where all that money went.
Understand, 4 years ago, you guys transformed our lives by keeping us loud, live, and independent. We used to be on a network, and now we're not. We used to have ads, and now we don't. We used to have to pinch our nose and say things that we didn't believe, and now we do not, and it's all because of you guys. If you want to join the cord-cutting revolution, if you feel like you've saved even one dime from listening to this show and the advice that we give, please, please, please head on over to patreon.com/cordkillers. Pledge literally any amount, and we'll be your best friends on the planet.
Now, how to watch. All right, I'm gonna tell you a story here today.
Oh, thank goodness. Does it involve any established properties? Is it a Disney property?
Just Fox, Viacom, and CBS. Few little companies you may not have heard of.
Okay, go on.
Fox News is starting its over-the-top streaming service in Q4, designed for the Fox News superfan. So, okay, it sounds like Fox News is getting it. Go straight to your audience. Fox Nation is the name. It'll have live exclusive daily programming, access to exclusive events, a library of 20 years of Fox News programming. No pricing yet, but it will be paid. CBS News does their news service for free with ads. I'm assuming Fox Nation will be with ads, but you also pay for it. Fox is describing it as supplemental to the Fox News channel and refers to it as an over-the-top opinion platform in its announcement. They talk a lot about interactivity and bringing in the audience, but it's not a replacement for Fox News. They're saying, we want you to watch Fox News 24 hours a day, but also watch Fox Nation 24 hours a day. This is reminded me of what Viacom said about their own over-the-top service that they describe as this great service, but then say, but it's meant to be a complement to your existing cable subscription. So I was wondering, is this a lie that the companies are telling themselves and the cable companies to get comfortable with the idea of offering direct services? Or is it just myopia? Because CBS seems to get it. They're like, CBS News is straight to you. We don't care what anyone else thinks. CBS Sports HQ just launched. It's a 24-hour streaming sports news channel available for free on most platforms in the CBS Sports app, in the CBS All Access app. Viewers will be able to watch previously streamed segments. They're putting a DVR in there. CBS just seems to be like, sorry, cable companies, we're going to sell our main channel directly to subscribers. You may hate it, but we're going to sell it directly to subscribers. We're going to give free news, free sports news. I wouldn't be surprised if the next thing they come up with is a CBS sports subscription package. That's more complicated because of the sports rights involved. But they don't seem to be worrying about cannibalizing their traditional platform, Brian.
Let me make a pitch, and I'll leave it to Amos to decide if this is crazy talk or not. Fox News, in its genesis, is meant to be, there exists this thing called news that you assume, let's say 100% of the audience wants. And they say, you know what, we bet 30% of the world would like to hear our angle on the news. So you take the news, the core product, and you run it through the filter of Fox News, right? And you do that for 20 years. And then you get to a place where enough people have become fans of the way Fox News, and full disclosure, my dad keeps Fox News on all the time. By itself, at some point, the mode by which you get the news becomes a character unto itself. And by itself, the idea of 30 minutes of Shepard Smith doing show prep would not sell anywhere. The idea of Greg Gutfeld answering viewer email for 30 minutes wouldn't sell anywhere. But if you are somebody who at some point you realize you love the Fox part more than the news part, right? Let's say, imagine that you have grown accustomed for 10 years to Fox News. And when a new Trump story comes up, you realize that you're more interested in the Shepard Smith part of the story than the Trump part of the story, because what the product is now Shepard Smith talks about Trump, and you realize, yeah, man, I'll give you $10 a month if I could just get an hour of your thinking of the behind the scenes that goes into your commentary, that goes into your storytelling, that goes into your stuff. separate that. Press pause on that whole idea. Separately, look at cord killers, right? You have cord-cutting news, and you have... There are many people reporting on cord-cutting news, but you only have one cord killers. So imagine you and I were to create a sub-sub channel with a separate Patreon that's only a nickel a month or whatever. And maybe you and I don't even talk about cord-cutting news. It's just me and Tom talking about whatever. We answer email or what have you. I feel like there are two plays that media agencies have. They can expand the base, which is to reach outward and get more people under the tent, or they can mine the core, which is extract the maximum amount of money and value from the hardcore fans. This is Fox News mining the core, which I think has been an untapped market for a very, very long time. And I think this is a really smart play. And also, this is the weird part, Tom. I don't think it has anything to do with the lip service or non-lip service of cutting the cord and doing over-the-top networks. Amos, does any of that resonate with you?
No, I think you nailed it exactly. It's them mining the core. It's them tapping a little bit more money out of that audience that wants more than what they're getting on the television and allowing Fox News to do a little bit more risque than what they already do on their nationally broadcast channel. So you get this group of people that wants more. They want to go even further in that direction that Fox News likes to go, but you can't really do that on an open system where everybody can watch it. You need to kind of filter that down, and it's a self-filtering system. You just get the super fans that want more of that direction, and you're delivering it, and oh, by the way, you're making a little bit of money on it, and you know they already have the content because they've been doing this for, like you said, for 20 years. They already know exactly where their audience wants them to go, and this is going to give them a channel to go.
And here's the weird part, Amos, is I can envision a moment where I'll keep using Shepard Smith because he's one of the three names that I know from the network. So Shepard Smith has one, you know, every so often he'll have like a 30-second clip that is calling out the president and it's exquisitely crafted and he represents, you know, the value of the Fourth Estate and so on. My guess is there's a good 30-minute story behind how he wrote that 30-second clip. And if that story exists and if you're somebody who loves this environment and these characters and you want to know more about them. I mean, in a world where, you know, all four of us here rely on relationship marketing, direct to your consumers. This seems like such a natural catch up. You know, it's almost like they're 10 years late in offering this thing.
Yeah. The Fox News press release couldn't have said it better, Brian. That is exactly what they're trying to tell everyone that this is. This is not an over the top service. This is just us relating to our super fans. That, like, everything you've said is exactly what they're selling. So I guess what I'm saying is, like, so you buy that this isn't anything else but that.
Tom, if I'm going to be truly honest, not only do I buy it, but it is half of our business model. So I've got to buy it.
Well, no, I know it's us, but is that what they're doing?
I think it is. I think it
because
is. Because
here's the difference. The big difference in the scenario you painted is we don't withhold our main programming from anyone.
Sure.
We don't say, well, if you love us, first of all, you have to subscribe to cable. Then you can get our channel. Then you can become a super fan. Then you can pay for this great, you know, super fan experience.
Yeah, but we do say, if you like us, go out and buy a subscription or some ability to get on the internet.
Yeah, but okay, but I'm sure let's argue to learn here. Like,
sure.
They're not setting it up that way. They're saying, and this is where I'm going with this. I think this is them saying, gosh, everything that Brian says is a really good idea. And what great cover for us to create a streaming service that won't upset any of our cable providers and give them leverage over us when we have our rights negotiations, because we can't quite go straight to the consumer like CBS is, because we already have Fox News. CBS News can go straight to the consumer because there's no CBS News channel on Comcast or Time Warner or anything like that.
Tom, I am so excited. I think this is one of the few times that I'm the one farther in on the limb than you are. as far as thinking conspiracy minded or lowest common denominator or all that, like I hope this doesn't make me sound like a Fox News apologist. Like, I'm taking them at their word because this makes sense. Like, no matter how people get to Fox News, this makes sense. Whether you have to pay to get it, or whether it's for free, whether it's broadcast, whether it's not, whether it's on the internet, whether it's somebody barking on the corner down the street, if you're in this environment, there's a deeper level, and there's I think it's a smart move to offer programming in that regard. And I don't think that they're doing it for any other reason but to extract the maximum amount of dollars from the hardest core of fans.
Possibly. I would say that you don't have to choose between our two viewpoints. That's kind of where I'm going with this.
And that's true.
That's why I said, like, they said, hey, you know, not all of our audience is too old to use the internet. Some of them do. Let's double down on that. It's really important to keep them. Let's super serve them. And that's all to what you were saying. And at the same time, there's somebody in the room saying, yeah, and I've been pushing, like, we need to have a Fox News channel that we sell directly to people who don't subscribe to cable. That's that audience.
This is
their baby steps towards that.
Now you got me putting on my cynical hat. And so I'm projecting forward a year, and let's say there's 200,000 subscribers to whatever this thing is. It seems like the next natural move is, well, what we need to do is have something explosive that is exclusively released in this environment.
And only on Fox Nation. You tease on the Fox News Channel.
All right. You brought me back down. I was flying with the angels for a few seconds there, Tom. Now you brought me back to Earth.
Yeah, this is just going to be a constant upsell. This is going to be something that anytime you see Fox News, it's going to be, hey, if you get Fox Nation, you can get even more of this and get even deeper into this. And it's just more of a paywall to go behind, because the further you hide behind a paywall, Fox News is already on cable, right? So you can't just get it on over the air. So they can say things they can't really say over the air, because the FCC might actually get involved eventually. And then this gives them another platform to go even further into conservative town and say even more outlandish things, and their audience is going to love it, and they're going to have this paywall to protect them and to dive as deep into that as they want. And that's exactly where this is going to go.
Now think about this. This is now I'm back to optimism, right? Fox News is derided for being super far right, but what if they were able to essentially quarantine the rightest of the right side? Let's say whatever this product is becomes essentially like InfoWars, and by having it there, maybe they could. What if the side effect of that was that their programming moved a little more centrist? Would that be good?
So you're saying providing the sanctuary for the farthest of the conservatives,
the most extreme? Like, yeah, it's InfoWars 2.0.
And therefore opening some of their normal Fox News channel to something a little more center.
That's
kind of I think that's the most optimistic view you can have on this.
Okay, all right.
I mean, if it ain't broke, if it hasn't been broke for over a decade.
Touche.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about what to watch in Under Surveillance.
It's all about location.
Under Surveillance.
I got a bunch of stuff coming soon. Remember, it used to be the fall premieres? It almost feels like it's the spring premieres. We got so many things coming out. Netflix, February 27th, gets The Push. It's a reality show that originally aired in the UK back in 2016, where psychological illusionist Darren Brown leads a crew of 70 actors in an elaborate plot to get one contestant to push an old man off a building. Don't worry, no murder is actually committed. Spoiler alert in the series.
So we found out about this 6 days ago, and right before Night Attack. And Justin and I, both having a background in the magic industry, talked about the history that Darren Brown has with his specials. And in particular, this feels like, forgive me for saying, a reboot of his special called The Heist, in which he tried to create a series of social pressures that would cause a rational human being to think that in this moment, the right thing for me to do is pull out a fake gun and rob this armored car and take the money. And so
this is a new flavor of that.
It sounds like an old flavor, but
This one, instead of rob, you kill.
Correct. So my guess is somebody at Netflix was like, hey, man, The Heist was great. He's like, yeah, it sure was. He was like, can we just do it with a different endpoint? And they were like, well, the only thing I could think of worse than robbing an armored car would be murder. Now, having said this, there are Darren Brown is an exquisite master storyteller. He is truly one of the best that magic and the fringes of that psychological area has to offer. Everything I've seen him do is really, really interesting. You can argue about whether this is horrific or crass or any of those things. I would hazard a guess that whatever those things are that you would argue about are built into the marketing plan for this thing. But having said all that, I really enjoyed the heist, even though there were giant chunks of it I just did not believe and was pulled out of. And I will definitely be watching The Push. And if you haven't seen The Push, go watch the heist right now before you watch The Push.
This is one of those things, reading this article that you guys had in the show notes, I hadn't heard about this until I read this, but it as I was reading it, I was reminded of the Milgram experiment, and then it actually quotes into the Milgram experiment, and I was sitting there thinking, we shouldn't be doing this, but I'm going to watch.
Well, and if it makes you feel any better, this is part of the reason I say watch the heist, because in the heist, they have the problem that one of the things they do is recreate the Milgram experiment. And one of the people just halfway through just sort of stops you like, hey, I can't do this anymore. You guys are just doing the Milgram experiment and I'm aware of what you're doing. And then they were like, okay, you're out. but they owned it and they told that as part of the story, right? So if it's definitely watch the heist, definitely watch the Push.
Yeah. And if you're like, wait a minute, I don't want to get caught up in this. This is actually inoculating yourself against manipulation.
Correct.
To see how it works.
Correct. Correct. Because the mere knowledge of how this stuff goes stops it from being a problem.
Yeah. And if you want to stop yourself from becoming a Twitch streamer, watch their live reality competition stream on.
It premieres March 8th
at 3 p.m. Pacific. It was just a horrible transition.
Oh, okay.
Like, you'll inoculate yourself somehow by watching this. No, I don't know if it's going to be bad or not. It could be great. Premieres March 8th. It's got a bunch of streamers who are competing for a $60,000 grand prize. And of course, the title of Twitch top streamer or whatever they're going to call it.
I'm trying to see if there's any names I recognize. I'm not seeing any.
Well, there shouldn't be, right? Like the idea is these are up and comers that nobody knows and they're going to give them a chance.
Yeah. I think Justin was aware of like two of them and he's kind of into Twitch stuff. So
yeah.
It's up and coming.
Now, having said this, so there's I think we've talked about this before, a fidelity of presence. There's me, the actual me, 24 hours live streaming with whoever I'm looking at any given time. Even when I'm sleeping, I'm constantly broadcasting being Brian Brushwood, right? Then you have the shallowest virtualization of that, which is I hop on Twitch for 10 hours a day. I react authentically to stimulus in the form of various video games or whatever. And so people, you know, hundreds, maybe thousands of people get a sense of who Brian Brushwood is without ever actually having met him face to face. Then you have more condensed virtualization of your presence. And it's like, what if you took the best 30 minutes of that day, condensed it down, edited it together. Now it's you're sort of freebasing Brian Brushwood. And like it's more intense and it's still authentic, but it's a little bit upgraded. And then you eventually get to the place where, you know, you get I don't know, the news summaries of the 30-minute condensed version of Brian Brushwood. So it's like, it'll be interesting to see Twitch kind of become the minor leagues to lead people into media of condensed media and then eventually big media figures. Does that make sense?
Sure. And you're seeing this as sort of like them
a natural,
rallying. This is training camp for the minor leagues that we run.
Yeah, correct. Correct. I think Twitch needs to move into what they have is they have they're a mile wide and an inch deep. Now what they want to do is they want to pick the best parts to make it an inch wide and a mile deep and do that time condensed, you know. As much as we all love, let's say, Justin Timberlake, we are only seeing 30 minutes representing 3 years of work in his life at any given time.
Amos, what do you think?
My first thought on this was, these reality shows are, that's how I found out about Danielle Mackey, Trade Chat. She's an amazing YouTuber. She's on King of the Nerds. I love this show. She's one of my favorite YouTubers now. She's got all kinds of different things going on. She's, you know, even somewhat of a social justice warrior, just the touch, because she's always defending herself in a great way. So at first I was like, I don't want another reality thing on another platform. We already have reality. It's called IRL, right? But I can't resist the urge to say that one of these Twitch streamers might actually be really awesome and might catch my fandom. So
yeah, people only disrespect reality shows they don't like. and maybe some people don't like all of them, and that's fine. But I always hear people, oh, I hate reality shows, except for Top Chef. Top Chef's great. Or, you know, I hate reality shows, except for that runway show. That one's pretty good, right? Like, it's always like, oh, that topic is interesting to me, so I'm curious about that.
Yeah.
Right.
Roxanne, the story of Lolita Roxanne Shante Gooden, premiered at Sundance last year and is making its way to Netflix on March 23rd. It's about her fearsome battle rap career starting out in Queens.
This is a biopic or a
yep.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is the actual person playing herself, no, telling her story, or
no, it's just a biopic.
Oh, okay, all right,
yeah.
It's an autobiopic, right? It's a fictional representation called a movie.
Explain more about these moving pictures. I'm very curious.
So for me, as a father of a blended family, anytime we can get a strong Black woman represented on a major platform, I'm all for it, because I have daughters and they need to see positive role models in media, not just through their mom. And I'm all for it. And this looks awesome. This looks great. It looks like it's well done. I'm in.
Yeah. And her story is pretty fascinating, because, you know, mm-hmm. she's coming up in a world where her parents don't want her to do this. All the other battle rappers don't think she can do this. And so it looks pretty interesting to me. A couple of notes. Silicon Valley comes back March 25th on HBO. Krypton debuts on March 21st on Sci-Fi. And Legion set to return to FX on April 3rd. Did you all see the trailer with Aubrey Plaza?
Yes, 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 yes. Oh, my God. Aubrey Plaza's all over the place. She's amazing and wonderful. And Aubrey Plaza is hell. She's never as Aubrey Plaza ish as I would like as she is in this. She's the best.
My only thing to say on this is I didn't have time to go in my closet and grab my Hannah Montana 3D glasses to try it out that way. That's gonna happen right after the show, though, because it just looks like it's gonna be amazing that way.
It's without spoilers, you see Aubrey Plaza speaking, telling some facts about some things, but over the course, but you know, if you've watched the first season, that she's not the most trustworthy person. How about that?
I had no idea season one didn't really happen.
Is that a spoiler? Is that a spoiler to say?
I would say don't watch this clip if you haven't seen season one.
Yeah,
I think it goes out of its way.
To be honest, I would say stop watching Cord Killers and go watch Legion season one.
You could wait another 5 minutes.
Just keep your Patreon
finally,
going.
There's a teaser trailer out for Sci-Fi's The Expanse, which we finally have a date. Will return on April 11th.
Tom, I know before I even ask you, you watched this, right?
The teaser? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I did not. I will not. I'm just going to dive in and
don't watch it, but it won't ruin anything. It's okay. A lot of faces going, it's that kind of teaser trailer. Like, it doesn't spoil it.
Does it end with somebody saying
up the second season yet? So I can't watch the trailer for the third. And now that it's out, there's a date. I'm like, now I have a deadline to finish the second season.
I mean, so, I suppose you could see somebody in this teaser trailer and go, oh, they live. But other than that, that's all it's going to spoil you on. In developing news, Amazon announced it has ordered a second season of the show Lore. That's the one based on the podcast. Sean Crouch, who did Numbers and Helix, will take over from Glenn Morgan of X-Files and Millennium fame as the showrunner. Deadline says Netflix has got the rights to Life Sentence, a movie based on Matthew Baker's short story about a future where authorities wipe the memories of criminals instead of sending them to prison. It's directed by Matt Reeves, who did the last two Planet of the Apes movies. And Netflix has ordered its first original home makeover show with the working title Amazing on the Inside, about people's insides. No, it's about homes. Homes that look amazing on the inside, but obviously are ugly on the outside, I guess. Netflix also announced a new Tiffany Haddish-led animated series from the team behind BoJack Horseman called Tuca and Birdie. And Netflix obtained the rights to the Duplass Brothers' next four films.
The original working title of Pretty on the Inside, whatever that was Let's Print Money, a Netflix story.
Home shows. They'll watch anything.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, this is messy. Now it's clean. It's as though you did something. Let's do that again.
What I think is great about this is all these home shows play on your wish fulfillment, right? I wish I had that home. Oh, I wish someone would do that to my home. This one says, hey, is your home ugly on the outside? Don't worry. People might think it looks like this one on the inside because all these homes are ugly on the outside too.
Yeah, that's
home makeover shows are the only thing that I love to watch in a doctor's waiting room. And my orthopedic surgeon, he has the HGTV, and I'll just sit in there and I'll show up early to those appointments just because it's always showing some fancy house in the middle of Canada somewhere that is just beautiful. And it's like the one thing that can keep my attention away from the fact that I'm getting ready to go in for a lot of twisting, turning, and pain.
Yeah.
Finally, Amazon has acquired worldwide rights to E&M Bank's space opera series and will adapt the first novel, Consider Phlebas, for television. If you don't know the Culture series, they're great. Novels focus on a highly advanced society that goes to interstellar war with a violent race bent on galactic domination. And the first book centers on a spy tasked with recovering an AI that has the ability to help win that war.
Dude, the first of these books that I stumbled across was Player of Games, and that's fairly far into it. But it's like this whole world and the nature of it is just wonderful. I think this is a really good get by Amazon, and I'm really excited to see what they make with it.
All right, let's talk about what we've actually been watching that's been out, starting with you, Amos. What's been filling up your screen?
So it's soccer season. That means, as Brian can attest, kids' activities rule everything. So I'm basically just catching up on some stuff. My family finally caught on to Black Mirror, so I'm rewatching Black Mirror with them so that I can finally watch the fourth season because they won't let me watch it without them.
How did your kids like the thing with the prime minister and the pig? How did that go over?
So the twins are 15 and my son is 12, and they all thought, why weren't they just watching for the girl to come walking around? Like they were like, whatever's on TV, like, you have more important things. Worry about the girl, not that. And it was great. So the one that they freaked out most about was the one with the bees. They're just like me. They don't like bees. So that was a little unnerving. I've also been watching some great show that I found on YouTube that I finally decided to catch up on called The Modern Rogue.
It's
an amazing show. This is really good.
It's been in my pocket just waiting for me to have some time, and I finally just Let's take the dive back in.
Is this a true story? Like you just dove in and sort of binged your way through it? I would love to know kind of how you negotiated that.
I went in and I was like, you know what? I'm going to watch some Modern Rogue. I've been putting it off too long. I typed it in there, and I don't even know what order I'm watching them in. I watched a bunch of whiskey episodes, some cigar episodes, a bunch of beer episodes, you know, the stuff that I like.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of whatever's next on YouTube, I just keep clicking next and just letting it go. And it turns out that is one of the shows that I love to watch. It makes me laugh while I'm actually doing other things. It's not brainless, as in it's not just a waste of my time, but it doesn't require too much of my attention, and it still gives me information that I enjoy. So
thank you to whoever decided
to create that show. That's that's a good one there.
You know what's funny is Tom just joked, wait till you see the bees episode, but then I suddenly thought, oh, we should do an episode on honeymaking. We totally should.
Of course, I watched Black Panther with the family on Tuesday night. We have Tuesday night family time, and that was our family time last week. And of course, I'm rewatching Game of Thrones, which of course we'll get to a little bit later. I'm doing that for a podcast with Jenny Josephson and Richard Gunther, and that is a hell of a lot of fun. And my 12-year-old or my 15-year-old twins are watching with me, and they cannot get enough of that show. It's amazing. Nice.
That's great. Brian, what about yourself?
Watch Deadwood, of course. We'll talk about that at Spoiler in Time. Annihilation, I already sung its praises. Please, please, please go watch it. Saw Counterpart just minutes ago, right before this. That's one of the weird things about it coming out on Sunday nights. And Game Night. Holy cow, Tom. Game Night is so good. It's so much fun. It's great.
That's awesome.
How do you really feel?
I'm moderately thrilled with it. No, it was.
I know what you mean. I haven't seen it, but it is, by the trailer, a pretty straightforward, comedy about crime gone wrong. I've seen this movie before, but apparently it's so well done.
it's really smart and funny and well paced. The comedic timing is great. Rachel McAdams is fantastic with Jason Bateman. I was about to say Jeff Goldblum. That would have been weird. It constantly, like maybe three times during the movie, I had the thought, wait a minute. Are they just setting up this? And then a character at that exact moment says, sounds to me like you're just setting up this. And I was like, yes, it's great. It keeps you guessing all the way to the end. It's awesome.
Excellent. Excellent. I've watched a lot of the stuff you talked about, because we'll talk about it in spoiler time. Annihilation, Counterpart. By the way, on the Stars app, Counterpart comes out Sunday morning.
Ooh.
You don't have to wait for the evening. All right. Check into that. For the return of Autopilot to Current Geek, if you watch my show Current Geek, we'll be starting to do Autopilot episodes every so often. I watched the pilot of Lost.
Does it stand
up? I don't
want
to spoil too much about what we're going to talk about on the show, but it was 14 years ago.
Oh, no!
I mean, a lot of it holds up, but I was like, wow, this looks 14 years old. Some of it is just that it's not in HD. It was a 4:3, you know, presentation.
I thought for sure it was 16:9.
There are versions of it in 16:9, I think.
Okay.
But the one that I streamed off Hulu was just a... Well, actually, I think it was 16:9, but not HD.
We lived Lost because I was living in Hawaii when it was actually filming on location, and I was stationed at Hickam. So we went out and saw the scenes and where they were filming the plane wreckage and everything else. And we were doing all of that because of the hype leading up to the show. And I would really like to know. I'm stuck now because I have to listen to this episode, because I want to know how you felt the first episode was after being disappointed by the last episode.
Well, I wasn't disappointed by the last episode.
Yeah, so. I'm on Tom's team on this one. I'm very forgiving. I think they did what they needed to do.
Yeah.
I think the last episode is the only one that I didn't like.
Been watching The Magicians, which is fan-freaking-tastic. And, of course, Felicia Day has joined the cast, which just makes it even better. Deadwood. And I want to give a shout-out for the Olympics, which I watched a lot of. I think NBC, while they had problems, probably did their best job so far of streaming it. Mike Tirico did a great job hosting it. The app interface needs work, but they had everything available, and they had everything available live, and that was huge. And I like the Olympics, and sometimes I feel bad that I like them, because I know there are things about the Olympic organization that I don't like their ridiculous over-defense of the trademark of Olympics and all of that. But I still believe that idea, even if it's not 100% true, that wow, maybe we could all just get together and play games as a species, you know, and that's pretty cool. This was
the first Olympics that my kids actually watched. So I got to explain to them how the gold medals work when it says world record beside it versus Olympic record, and kind of just the whole process of the Olympics. So I got to explain that, which basically showed me how little I know about the Olympics is what it came out to.
Nice. All right. What are we on the lookout for, Bryce?
Hey, I wanted to share a new another reboot on Netflix. Netflix rebooted Queer Eye, formerly Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, as Queer Eye. It's back. They got five homosexual men who are proficient. If you don't know the show, if you somehow don't know the original show, it stars five different men who have expertise in grooming and culture and lifestyle and cooking, and take regular people and clean them up.
And it used to be not just regular people, but specifically straight guys,
right?
And take them out of their element, get them to explore new aspects and so on. Mm-hmm. But in this case, you were saying this episode, not necessarily just straight men.
One of the episodes I've gotten to so far is actually about the Fab Five helping a gentleman get comfortable coming out to his stepmother, which is it's really interesting how prescient it feels. Because times have changed since the original series. I don't know that I'm the best person to gauge how well this lands, but the third episode, they start with all five of them in this big pickup truck talking about the person that they're going to do a makeover on, and they're in the whole season takes place in Atlanta, And one of the Fab Five is driving, and he's a black guy, and he gets pulled over, and you think, oh, this is a weird way to start it. And then it they play it for like a real long time that like, oh, this is weird. Like, why was he being pulled over? He doesn't have his ID on him, this, that, and the other thing. And it turns around because it's like, oh, the cop is the guy who referred his friend to be nominated.
But meanwhile, they let that awkwardness linger.
So it sits there for a minute, and it does it. That's, but they also refer back to it. The guy that they're making over is a cop, and they're able to have like a very thing like, hey, you know, like, this totally made me feel weird. I've been weird this whole time. Ben, we're all human. We can talk about this, and it's a discussion. And so it's very prescient, and it's now, and it's a reality show. So who knows how much
you saying prescient? Prescient means anticipating something in the future.
Then I don't mean prescient. I mean it means very now, very contemporary.
Ah. Present.
Present. Yeah, there we go. Minus one of those syllables. It feels in the now, and between stuff like that, between helping an actual gay guy come out to his parents, it feels very now in a way that the original series was trying to feel contemporary and move social discussions forward. So,
sure. Yeah, yeah.
It's neat, and
that's really cool that they took what was good about it then, but didn't leave it there, and said, "How do we make it be like that, but now?"
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as a side effect of being on Netflix, it's longer. It's like 44 minutes or so. So it's like an hour-long show.
A little bit more room to breathe. Yeah. You don't have three ad breaks
because you know. Then all of the five hosts can get their own little thing of like. You know, here's how grooming, clothing, redo the home. And so there are bits where you actually feel like you get useful information if you're maybe not up to date with all, you know, grooming and stuff. And also because it's on Netflix, it's not censored really. So you hear them say, mostly it's the S word, but it's weird.
Apparently Sci-Fi Network is letting the F word fly these days. So who knows?
Oh, really?
Dude, I mean, and certainly on Counterpart, you know, there's like five F words an episode now.
Yeah. Although that's a movie channel, so I kind of expect that.
Yeah. Premium channel. But it's interesting. It's a really interesting take on it. And I really enjoyed it. It's more like Netflix doing basic cable stuff. I mean, we just talked about a home improvement show coming to Netflix. And I'm all in for it. It's pretty cool.
Excellent. Well, if you got something we should be on the lookout for, folks, email us, cordkillers@gmail.com. Now, Brian, Amos was telling us about this great show, The Modern Rogue. Where would we find that?
You know what? You'd probably find the show on YouTube, but I'd be more interested to see what's going on at themodernrogue.com, where brand new articles are coming out every single weekday of the week. And in fact, today...
Yeah, that's
right. I said the right words.
Prescient. You're being very prescient.
So get this. today's article is the 7 weirdest, most unexpected explosions that happen in real life. Get this, Tom. Picture this. It's World War II. A grenade is thrown. It bonks into a tree. Does not go off. Lays at the roots of the tree. Flash forward to 10, 20, 30 years later. The tree has now wrapped around the grenade. Tree gets cut down, chopped into wood. One of those wood pieces sold to an Austrian woman who feeds the firewood into a roaring fire. To hear the rest of the story, head on over to themodernrogue.com, man. There's some amazing stuff in there. I'm so excited.
I wonder what happens to it.
yeah, me too.
Spoiler, the article isn't called 10 Duds That You Expected to Blow Up.
That didn't, yeah. All right, let's move on to the front lines.
Front lines!
Hey, remember in December when we were talking about Disney and their lawsuit with Redbox over selling digital download codes, and we had a spurt of emails for weeks about people talking about the ethics of whether they should use download codes, and we got into just the digital voodoo? Well, the Hollywood Reporter says a California federal judge rejected Disney's request for an injunction to stop the practice, saying the wording on the DVD boxes is not an enforceable contract, that Disney was misusing copyright law in trying to prevent Redbox from selling the codes. Redbox has distribution deals with other studios like Warner Brothers, if you remember, which allows it to buy physical DVDs and Blu-rays and then offer them as rentals at kiosks. But Disney doesn't have a deal. So Redbox was buying them off the shelf, which then they come with these download codes, and Redbox was reselling the download codes at a fraction of the price. And apparently the judge is like, yeah, I don't see why that's a problem.
Amos, tell me how you feel about this. But to me, this feels right. It feels like a download code is property. And you should be, if you buy this property, you should be allowed to resell this property. Even if it is a license, even if it is, it seems, even if they say it's non-transferable, I don't know. This feels right to me.
Half my iTunes library are codes that family have sent me pictures of for me to redeem for the kids to watch. So I'm all about reselling the codes. And my fear is, are they going to discontinue the codes or are they going to strike a deal with Redbox? Those seem to be the two options.
Just strike a deal with Redbox, for goodness sake. What's the problem here?
Meanwhile, Dish announced that Sling TV now has 2.2 million subscribers, putting it ahead of DirecTV Now, which announced 1.2 million. PSVU is estimated to have 670,000. Sling also announced the NBA League Pass, which costs $29 a month, is available as an add-on. I am shocked by these numbers, Tom. I had the impression that VU was doing much better than a distant third place.
I knew DirecTV Now was doing better than everyone expected because of its advertising push. I figured PlayStation Vue was a little closer to Sling TV, but all that said, how cool is it that we have a story about the top multiple numbered streaming services?
Yeah.
And who's doing better than whom, and why is that weird?
No, this is tied. This is where we wanted to be. Amos, do you use any of these services?
No, I was lucky enough to have my mother-in-law come visit us for Thanksgiving, and she happened to have been frustrated by lack of our TV. So she kind of maybe put some activation codes into our Apple TVs, and that has taken care of a lot of our need for these things.
Well, there you go. The OnePlus 5 and 5T phones can't play Netflix video in HD because it shipped without Google's DRM that Netflix uses. However, OnePlus says, hey, we can update your handsets, right? All you got to do is send your phone to us, because the only way to put the DRM on the phone is to connect it to an authenticated PC that we have here at headquarters. OnePlus says they will pay for courier costs as long as you live in one of their service areas, and promises to turn the phones back around in less than 5 working days.
DRM still doing great. Apple is making security updates to its iTunes service that will mean it won't work with older devices. Among the now obsolete devices are the 11-year-old Apple TV, as well as running Windows XP and Windows Vista. The update will cut off the devices starting May 25th. How big a deal do you think that is?
It's a big deal if you're relying on one of these devices, but these are old.
Yeah. Mm. Super old.
And they're not disabling them. They're just saying iTunes can't work with that old of a technology and be secure anymore. So we're not going to let you do that.
How funny. Like, it used to be this that would be the kind of thing that would drive us nuts, but now we understand that it's these underpinnings that allow there to be a robustness to the agreements that cause these intellectual property rights holders to sign these agreements in good faith, right?
Yeah. All of these devices that are being cut off are devices I would have had to buy when I worked at CNET. That's how I think of it.
Yeah.
It was that long ago. Turner's Filmstruck is partnering with its corporate sister Warner Brothers Digital Networks to add more old films to the Filmstruck library, but they're big names. Some of the biggest names in film history: Citizen Kane, Rebel Without a Cause, Casablanca. Filmstruck, if you don't know, is a $7 a month service, or if you want to add the Criteria Collection, costs you $11 a month. They also sell a yearly pass for $99.
This is a smart, very market-specific play to cinephiles. I think that it all good news.
Yeah, somebody within Warner Brothers was like, wait, why don't we have some of the movies we own on this service so it could make more money? We should do that, and now they have. Let's check the dispatches from the front. The First email comes from Graham. He says, hey, Brian and Tom. By the way, this is Gouchum in the chat room if you ever see him in there. I live in a region where Netflix carries a fair bit of periodically released content. Sometimes there is a delay of only a day after broadcast in the home market, Star Trek Discovery on CBS All Access. Sometimes a week, Black Lightning on the CW. And, of course, David Letterman's My Guest Needs No Introduction is an entire month. But that's actually true for everybody. He just releases one a month. I used to use My List to remind me when such shows were available, but the notification algorithm has gotten to the point where it lets me know when a new episode is available without ever having to manually tag a show as something I'd be interested in watching again. My notifications are generally a mix of returning shows and new shows I might like. Even if I get three notifications for the week, they never feel spammy. I suspect the system works well for me because of my usage patterns. Netflix is used several times a week. Your mileage may vary.
Meanwhile, Gaspier writes, Brian and Tom, something very strange happened to me on the night of February 23rd. I was watching my Netflix with my fiance when between episodes it signed me out and asked for my credit card to resubscribe. I knew this must have been a mistake or a glitch on my PS4, so I tried to load Netflix on a few other devices all the same. None of my credit card info has changed and the card is still active. After resubscribing with the same card, it logged in just fine, but I think I was given new options for tiers, a $15 Ultra HD 4 logins at once, and a $10, I think, for us and 2 logins at once. Curious if anyone else has had the same thing happen. I Googled it, but didn't find anything. You think there's a conspiracy theory here, Tom?
No, that just sounds like a glitch. I mean, even we know Netflix raised their prices in November, but even when Netflix prices have gone up for me, it hasn't logged me out. It just raises the price. So
yeah,
you know,
I think it's the kind of thing where it's like there's a genuine news event happening, and as a result, glitches happen all the time, but you definitely notice them when it happens, when the price goes up.
Oh, you know what might have happened with Netflix, because I've had this during these different price bumps. When you log in on some platforms, it'll say, hey, we need you to acknowledge that your bill is going to go up.
Sure.
You know, we emailed you to tell you about it. You got to hit a button that says it's okay to do that. And so maybe there's a chance that they missed that, or they were using platforms that didn't have that option.
Interesting.
I think that's a possibility.
Yeah.
The only time I've ever been signed out of Netflix in the middle of something is when one too many people try to log in at a time. So
yeah,
that'd be my first question.
Yeah. Are you sticking with the 2 logins, or did you go to the 4 logins?
We have the 4 just because we have so many people in the house and we've got 4 Apple TVs. And well, if we want to watch Netflix on all 4 of them, we want to watch Netflix on all 4 of them.
Man, I got to tell you, like I just keep deluding myself thinking like, well, maybe some will watch PS View while others watch and maybe some will know we no, all want
half
Netflix.
Half the time we have 3 TVs. They're all watching the same thing just in different rooms because they just need their space.
Yeah. It's fair enough. That's worth $3 a month. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, they're texting each other while they watch the show. They're live streaming with each other over text from different rooms in the same house. It's crazy.
We have a lot of people with different strategies on how to watch Star Trek Discovery, but I have not yet heard this one. This person said, I have not yet finished watching the season, but I've discovered how I will. The thing that turned me off to CBS All Access was the lack of Dolby 5.1 surround sound. In fact, any kind of surround sound. This is a huge letdown. Last night, I was browsing for shows on Amazon Prime Video on my Shield TV and noticed that they were advertising an add-on for CBS All Access. I clicked on the page, and they had a 5.1 icon listed with each episode. Thought it might be a mistake, but then I thought I might as well try and was offered a week-long free trial. Turned on an episode of Discovery and was happy to see my receiver switch over to digital Dolby 5.1 audio. Now, we have a week of commercial-free CBS All Access at no cost if we cancel before the first bill. More than enough time to watch all the episodes of Star Trek Discovery, and we get to enjoy it with 5.1 surround sound in our home theater. If other listeners have been waiting for the season to be complete before signing up for CBS All Access, I recommend going through Amazon Prime Video if they have it. Watch the whole season for free if you watch it in less than a week.
Holy cow, man. I think we're short on time. Do we want to skip? Here, I'm going to skip to the very last one here.
Yeah, sure.
Hey, killers. My dad got Sling TV Blue a little less than a year ago, and I realized that the streaming video quality from Sling TV is probably the worst I've seen on online video streaming. Of course, OTA is going to have higher quality than streaming video, but it hit me last night when my dad was watching college basketball on FS1. I walked by and was struck by how good the video quality was. Frame rate was really good. good. Color was vibrant. Seemed to have it didn't seem to have as much noise as usual. I casually said to him, "Hey, that looks pretty good for Sling TV." However, he replied, "Sling TV? No, this is Fox Sports Go." I had not expected. I apologize for this representation of all the characters.
We're sorry.
They're all 100% authentic, I swear. I had not expected such a noticeable difference between Fox Sports Go and Sling TV. You guys have tested probably all of the live streaming services. Hold on, somebody moved a thing. What was your experience with the other services' video quality when compared to cable over the air and TV Anywhere apps?
But let me just answer this really fast. There's so many variables that can play a part in this, including which device you are using and whether the app has been updated recently. Sling TV, for me, looks much better on certain devices than it does on others because of the way the apps work. And that could explain why maybe Fox Sports Go more recently retooled their app to improve how it works versus Sling TV, and it just handles buffering better and can provide better looking video. So it's not shocking that this would happen, but I'm sure it was surprising to realize, oh, wait, it's the same platform and I'm going through a different app and it looks better. That's weird. I'm curious what device it was he was watching on.
Yeah. Also, I'm not curious because you're right. Like, because every device is different. So it's like, it doesn't matter.
Well, some device I would like that to know so I could say, yeah, Sling TV has apparently got problems on that platform.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
Hey, Anthony, I'm sorry, Amos, thank you for joining us on the show. Tell folks about Ritual Misery. What's going on with that? Where can they find it?
You can celebrate all things geek every Thursday night at 7 p.m. Pacific on diamondclub.tv or twitch.tv/ritualmisery. We are getting super excited about South by Southwest. Our guest this week is a friend of ours that we met at South by. And it's the annual the mecca of a Diamond Club. So we make sure that happens. I also want to stress that there is a meetup. Let me get my details right here. The Diamond Club meetup at Darwin's Pub on 6th Street, 8 March at 6 p.m. local. So make sure you make it out to that. And if you happen to not have caught Game of Thrones, or if you want to do a rewatch and have some friends listen with you, letstalkaboutthrones.com. Cruise on by there. Subscribe to the podcast. Myself, Richard Gunther, has never seen it, never read it. And, of course, Jenny Josephson is a goddess of all things geek. So she knows more than we could ever possibly imagine about the series. And we go through and we don't recap it. We don't tell you what happened in the episode. We react to the things that happened. So it's not really a recap show. It's more of a post-show talking with friends.
Right. Excellent. On. By the way, can't wait to see you guys out at South by Southwest. Quick reminder, we're going to be doing Night Attack Live, and we're talking about a Ritual Misery guest appearance at the Night Attack Live on March 10th.
All right, March 8th is the Thursday. March 10th is the Saturday, if that helps folks out. Yes. We want to see you there. I will be in town as well.
So, oh, my God.
If you don't see me first, I'll see you there or something like that. Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. We're live on twitch.tv/nightattack, which is also carried on diamondclub.tv Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We will cut your cords gently next time.
Hey, guys. Tom and Brian here. We just wanted to say thank you to all of our $5 patrons who keep us loud, live, and independent. You guys make Cord Killers the production that it is.
Your name appears in the video credits and appears in our hearts. And if you'd like to become one of them or see who they are, you can go to patreon.com/cordkillers.
You'll need to do more than just go there, though. You'll have to sign up and, you know, pledge an amount. But
unless you just want to see who they are.
Well, I mean, you can gawk. That's a little creepy, isn't it?
If you want to be a gawker,
let's go.
It's up to you.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.